Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And in this episode, we would like to talk about a recent New England Journal of Medicine publication on a drug that is used to basically preserve beta cell function and people with new onset type 1 diabetes. So we've talked about this topic in great depth with teplizumab, for example, mm-hmm. some other agents that have come through like verapamil. We talked about it with semaglutide. And now, kind of hot off the press in December, we've got this new journal article from this randomized controlled trial. So this was actually done with a drug called baricitinib, which is a drug that's actually currently available. It's actually available under the brand name called Olumiant, and this is being used to treat rheumatoid arthritis as well as severe alopecia, and it's even used actually to treat severe COVID-19 cases. So it's a drug that's currently available, but looking at a new indication for it. And this class is actually called a Janus kinase inhibitor. So I'll just give you a little bit of background, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, Natalie. But this was basically a phase 2 double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial where people with brand new onset type 1 diabetes, they had to be diagnosed within the last 100 days, were randomized to receive baricitinib at 4 milligrams once daily. So this is just a tablet. This is not an infusion. This is actually a tablet they take once a day, or they took a matching placebo over 48 weeks. And the primary endpoint was to look actually at the C-peptide, which is a marker of insulin production. And they were looking at this after basically a 2-hour mixed meal test. So they could see after having some food how much insulin production they had after this 48 weeks. So Natalie, I'll turn it over to you to kind of talk about what the results, what actually happened in this trial.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So 91 patients were in this trial. 60 got the medication, right? They took this pill every single day, and 31 were placebo, which means they got a pill that had nothing in it. And what did we look at? So they looked at 48 weeks and they looked at that C-peptide level. Remember, even with type 1, we can measure C-peptide and say, oh, this comes from insulin you injected versus insulin that a pancreas is still making. A lot of times when we diagnose diabetes, type 1 or type 2, we're drawing a C-peptide to see where that level is. Kind of, especially with type 2, to see, okay, do they need absolute insulin? Can I use a GLP-1? What else can I do and how do I do it? So it tells us that the person is making endogenous insulin, that insulin is coming from their own pancreas, which is really nice because then we know if a drug is working or not. So ultimately, what happened was at the end of those 48 weeks, people that were taking the medication had a higher C-peptide than those that didn't get the medication. So it was preserving that beta cell function. And that is key. Why is it key? Because of a couple of things. The only other medication, and this is, by the way, not FDA approved at this time, is an infusion. So there may be people that can't do the infusion for various reasons. So this is another option. The levels of hemoglobin were similar in the two groups. So they looked at some other things too, including levels of glycemic variability, which is what we love because both of us focus on technology. That glycemic variability at 48 weeks measured by continuous glucose monitoring. So people in the trial were actually used continuous glucose monitoring to measure glycemia, and that glucose variability, that coefficient of variation that we talk about, that means how much is the person going up and down, was 29% in the medication group and 33.8% in those that didn't get the medication, which means the people in getting the medication had less variability than the people that didn't get the medication, which makes sense because their pancreases could make insulin when the glucose was going up. So they had less up and down, which I love. I love when a continuous glucose sensor is used in a trial, but I also love when it proves something is working differently, where we might not see that in an A1C because the overall average might be the same, but you can see it in that fluctuation.
Yeah, I think it definitely, I mean, the results were statistically significant, and I would argue also clinically significant. I think it was about a 48% increase in C-peptide, but also with corresponding, there was less insulin needed. There was a little bit more time in range, a little bit less glucose variability, a little bit lower A1Cs were pretty comparable, but they were close. So there's definitely advantages for sure. I think when we think about this area, this is really a new and exciting area because technically right now there are no FDA approved therapies for new onset type 1 to just preserve that beta cell function. We, of course, have teplizumab, TZIELD, and you know, it is an infusion. So that for some people isn't the idea of taking a pill over an infusion, definitely sounds enticing, although I think they're very different things. So right now, teplizumab, or TZIELD is the brand name, has an FDA approval, but it is specific for stage 2 type 1 diabetes, which is actually, it is the stage where someone is really, you can kind of think of it as like pre-diabetes. They have some glucose. Basically, there's elevated fasting glucose or can be elevated A1C, but it doesn't quite meet that threshold of that diagnosis for diabetes. And that really has been shown to be the best time to get in there, give that therapy, and then that it actually delays the progression to that full-on stage 3 type 1 diabetes where you already have those irregular glucose levels and usually need to have insulin therapy. Now, with teplizumab, that was studied actually in the PROTECT study, which looked at just like this one. It actually gave teplizumab for stage 3 type 1 diabetes. And I would say they had impressive results too. They showed They showed C-peptide preservation. They also showed a lot of improvements in these time and range metrics as well. Their therapy is a little bit different. It's actually the way it was designed for that study. So when it's used as TZIELD to delay the progression, it's just one 14-day infusion. In this study, it was actually a 12-day infusion, but it was separated. It was two infusions separated by 6 months. So on one hand, you might say, well, an infusion is not something I don't like getting an IV. I'd rather take a pill. But on the other hand, some might say, well, I'd rather just get an infusion and then not worry about taking a daily pill. So I think both options are very intriguing. One of the things we probably need to think about, though, are the costs of the therapies as well. And this drug, even though it's a pill, and I think sometimes we think, oh, pills, like,
oh, it's a pill, it's cheaper, I can go get it at CVS or my favorite drugstore, right? No.
Right. Yeah. It's not just some generic pill. So I looked up the cost because it's available. This is manufactured through Lilly. So on their website, the list price of Olumiant, which is the generic, the baricitinib, is $2,622 for a 30-day supply of the 2-milligram tablets. Now, in this study, the 4-milligram tablets were used, and a 30-day supply of that is $5,244. And keep in mind, this was done almost over a year, right? And with no end in sight. In fact, the authors say probably if you were to stop the therapy, we would expect the C-peptide is going to decline. So I think that's like a consideration. It's kind of like, well, this works. Is it worth the price? I don't know.
Well, the other thing we need to think about, because we talk about infusion, it's not a 14-day continuous infusion. You go in, you get your infusion for, you know, up to an hour, and then you go home. You don't have to. It's not an inpatient procedure for most people. You are not. So when you're using teplizumab or TZIELD, then you're getting that infusion. It's depending on your system, your physician, your provider, your whoever's doing it, everyone has, whether you're a pediatric or, those kinds of situations, some people are doing it in an outpatient infusion center. Some people are doing the first few days in an outpatient infusion center, then doing them in home health, and it's an hour. So it is not like you have to take 2 weeks off and come in as an inpatient. I don't want people to think that Tzield or teplizumab is this 2-week infusion that you just sit there for. No, no. People are going back to work. They're being careful, right? But they're, you know, they were saying you have a higher risk of infection while you're doing this, those kinds of things. But we're not keeping them in a box either, right? You're not. So, and right now, Tzield is the only drug FDA approved to delay the onset of stage 3 type 1. Now we're looking at, now you get type 1, now what? Right? You've got, you now have stage, so we use the teplizumab in stage 2 type 1. Now we're looking at stage 3 type 1. You've been diagnosed. Your glucoses are high enough or your A1C is high enough. Now what are we going to do? And now we're looking at how do we slow this progression down and preserve those beta cells because of things like that we've talked about before, like metabolic memory. If I can keep someone making a little bit of their own insulin for the first 5, 10, and 15 years of their diagnosis, oh, I'm going to reduce their risk of complication. I'm going to reduce their fluctuations. It's going to be a much easier diagnosis. So we're looking at this now as these drugs are working. Now, how do we improve them? What if we gave both of them at the same time? What if we combined it with a little bit of some of the other things we've talked about, like semaglutide or verapamil? See, this is where I can kind of like, we could make someone a cocktail of things that I could keep them going for 20 years and still have some C-peptide. So what do you think about that? We just opened a door to treatment.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely when you look also, we do have to be aware of the cost and also the effects on the person. Fortunately, this drug, I think, was pretty, the baricitinib was pretty well tolerated, actually. When you look at the adverse effects in the placebo group versus the group that took the drug, they were pretty comparable. When it comes to the case of teplizumab, there definitely can be some more acute risk of infection. But once the infusion's over, generally people do really well and tolerate it very, very well after that initial infusion. To your point about like the different cocktails, I think it's very, very interesting. And when I hear the cost of this drug, suddenly it makes semaglutide sound very affordable, which is crazy. But when you hear that this is over $5,000 a month and then semaglutide's around $1,000 a month and often less if you have insurance or you have different savings cards and stuff. So I think that it's definitely very, very interesting. And of course, verapamil is cheap. I mean, verapamil is a few dollars a month. So if verapamil can offer at least a similar type of C-peptide preservation or close to it, is that more of a cost-effective option? But I am very excited where this is going because to your point, so I think the ideal is what can we do to prevent type 1 diabetes from happening in the first place? Now we've got a drug that we know can at least delay the progression to stage 3. So that's going to be optimal. If someone is in stage 2 and qualifies to get teplizumab, then that's going to be the best option. That's our FDA approved option. Unfortunately, people usually will eventually progress to stage 3. And also, unfortunately, many people aren't diagnosed until they're in stage 3. We need to do a better job of screening. So in that case, all you can do at that point is try to preserve the beta cells that you have left. And so I'm excited to see that there's so much research going on. Actually, this study was sponsored by JDRF. So that shows you, I mean, it wasn't the drug company sponsoring the study. It was actually JDRF. And so I think it shows you this is such an important therapeutic area. And I'm excited because this is really just the beginning. They even talked in the discussion of this article about potentially using baricitinib in that stage 2 type 1 diabetes to see if it has evidence there to delay the progression. And so to your point, I think like, yes, we're going to get different cocktails. We're continuing to get innovations, research, and yeah, hopefully we get better therapies.
And hats off to our friends at JDRF who said, okay, so teplizumab did this. Now what, right? What other drugs that are available and how do we do this? And how do we, you know, JDRF has always been the nonprofit that said, we are here to cure type 1 diabetes. We are here to cure type 1. As we watch more and more, the numbers of people diagnosed with type 1 are going up. And screening sounds like a great idea. Who do we screen, right? First degree relatives have the highest risk. And yet the majority of first degree relatives aren't the people that really get it, you know? So it's that screening versus not. The average person doesn't have someone in their life with type 1 that gets type 1. So we're missing a lot of people. And interestingly, other countries are now looking at universal screening. Italy just passed a law that said they're going to start universal screening. Some other European countries. So hopefully in the future, we're going to be able to say these people are have a higher risk of getting type 1 or going to get it. You know, if you have two or more autoantibodies positive, and you know, you have a, almost 100% or 800% risk of getting type 1 or chance of getting type 1 in your lifetime. So hats off to our friends at JDRF, who we love and adore, working on this to help our patients treat what they have today.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I'm so happy to hear about Italy passing that.
Yes.
I was thinking, why don't we just do universal newborn screening, that it's just kind of part of the panel when a baby is born, that they get screened to see if they have these autoantibodies. I think that would be really helpful information. We screen for all sorts of other things. So I would love to see that, because right now there's just not enough screening happening, even in those that are super high risk, that have other autoimmune conditions, that are in their family, that have relatives, first degree relatives with type 1 diabetes. I mean, those are like clear cut, like screen the family. Even those people aren't getting screened. Like, there really needs to, I think, just probably be more awareness on this and how easy it is to get screened, how many resources out there are out there to get screened, and make sure people are screened so that they can make an informed choice about using teplizumab if, you know, when they're being monitored, and if they're in stage two, being able to use teplizumab if they want to, but also being able to get enrolled then in these early research trials to test out these new therapies. It's really win-win, because potentially it can be benefit for the person, but also the research really is what drives us and moves us forward. So also a big hats off and thank you to all the people that volunteered to be in these research studies so that we can learn from them.
And just to clarify, so the Italian Ministry of Health back in September did adopt that launch of the new national screening program. And the problem is that screening a newborn doesn't really help, right? It's really, they're going to screen children ages 1 to 17 every couple of years for both type 1 as well as celiac disease.
Because if a newborn, you think not enough people have
their antibodies yet. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, because some may have the autoantibodies and you can detect. So that could be helpful. But yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of times it's going to be a little bit after that they could become detected. And also what makes it challenging, too, is that even if they're negative, they could become positive.
Right. Exactly, which is why they're going to repeat the screening, which is wonderful news.
Yeah,
right? It's wonderful that they're going to continue to follow these kids.
Yeah, that is wonderful. Well, thanks, Natalie, for a great discussion. I know we're both very passionate about this topic. It's so exciting to see all the new things coming out. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And that concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue.